Okay, everybody, welcome to the show. Paul, how's it going this week, man?
It's going well. It's good to be back here. As I mentioned before we started recording, I certainly have opinions on this movie. Which is Dune, but not just any Dune. It's the 1984 Dune, directed by David Lynch. And boy, was it a trip.
Give it up for David Lynch, everybody. Okay. Alex Princeton, how's it going this week, man?
Just blessed to be watching more David Lynch films on this show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you know what you were signing up for when you got on my podcast. Okay. Had you never seen this before? Well, you know what? We'll get into that. Forget I asked that. Neil, how's it going this week, man?
Not feeling the greatest, but hopefully this will be a passing thing. But
Physically, emotionally, spiritually, what are we feeling here?
Let's just all of the above that one.
All of the above. Okay. You know, I had a very disappointing McChicken yesterday, and I felt similarly on my way to band practice. It was a spiritual journey, the 10 miles I had to drive. And last, certainly not least. Oh, go ahead.
I was just saying that's truly 30 days in the wilderness, getting a bad McChicken.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. There was a new McDonald's remix menu I saw an ad for where it was like, they didn't call it the McGangbang, but you could order a McGangbang. I mean, they had the Alex Princeton, you seem confused. You've never heard of this?
You know what a McGangbang is?
I can only guess.
I would have told you this in college at some point.
I want you to guess what a McGangbang is.
I mean, it sounds like something that happens in the play place. No.
Oh, no.
After closing.
Oh, man. Who was asking?
Involving your shift manager and
No, a McGangbang is when you order a double cheeseburger and a McChicken and you put them together.
Yeah, that sounds pretty fucked up, too.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't sound appealing. I had a friend that used to joke about getting the land, air, and sea burger where you'd get a fish
That's
fillet,
a good one too.
A chicken sandwich, and a single cheeseburger and put those all together. Anyway, they had all sorts of messed up shit on that remix menu, but they did have a new vanilla shake that has bits of the McDonald's apple pie in it. That did sound good. Anyway, last but not least, our special guest all the way from the Seattle metropolitan area, Jesse Muller. Go to for Jesse, everybody.
Jesse,
how's it going this week, man?
Pretty good. I was in Vancouver Monday, Tuesday, and over the weekend. So that was pretty nice.
Do you have to get a passport?
We have passports from before times. But right. Yeah, Calvin had to get a passport.
I see. And I would imagine that crossing over to the Canadian side is pretty easy.
It's very easy. Yeah. They're like, you are fine. Go ahead.
What about coming back?
Coming back, it's also pretty easy. I would say, I would say I couldn't really tell the difference. People are pretty nice on the border. And actually, the first time we went to Canada and came back, there was a very long line. It was late at night. Calvin was pretty young and he was crying. We were coming back from Victoria and he was just wailing, and we're in this line of cars and he's wailing for like 40 minutes. They finally like get someone to open up another lane, and we get in, we get addressed, and like we just roll down the windows and like the baby's crying and they're just like, you can go. So
that's great. Yeah, you hear stories about that. I've like asked people up here, oh, have you ever been out of the country before? And they're like, yeah, I took a wrong turn at the Boundary Waters and wound up on the Canadian side. But it's pretty easy to get there and get back or whatever. So, okay. So this week we're going to be talking, as Paul mentioned before, about the 1984 David Lynch version of Dune, a movie that has a somewhat dubious reputation, although I've seen people that are really hardcore about this movie really go to bat for this movie. And there exists several cuts. There exists a bunch of different versions out there where people have like edited stuff back in. So it certainly does have a fan following, although it was, I think, kind of known widely as like one of the biggest bombs of the 80s. But before we get too much into that, Jesse, tell us why you wanted to bring Dune to the podcast this week.
Oh, this is a little self-serving, being that I'm not a regular member of your podcast, and I don't appreciate the level of detail that maybe you guys get into. I just wanted to watch the old Dune. I want to have a good excuse to watch the old Dune movie. I actually started watching it like a year ago. I was like really sick. I was excited about the first Dune movie, which I had watched. And before I watched the first Dune movie, I started listening to the audiobook. I got halfway through. It was pretty confusing. Like I was driving to work and I was stuck on this like 10-minute part of the book that I just kept it like re-listening to because it wasn't making any sense. I was like, okay, I'm going to stop listening to the audiobook and I'll actually just read the freaking book. So I read the book, then I watched the first movie. I thought it was amazing. I wanted more. So I want to watch the old Dune. And it was very weird. Super duper weird. So the
viewing for this podcast was your first full viewing of Dune.
Yes. Yes. Okay. I like started watching it a little bit in a daze when I was sick.
Right.
And I woke up in the middle of it and I'm just like, I can't do this. And I like turned it off. But this was my first full watch. Yeah.
Full watch. Yeah. You listened to the lady, the talking head for about 10 minutes, give expository dialogue, and then you gave up. Okay. Neil, tell me your history with this movie. Was this your first time watching Dune, and how much about Dune did you know about going into this?
So I've read Dune and the sequel Dune Messiah. I had seen David Lynch's 1984 version previously. Because I went through a yacht rock phase, and Toto,
yeah,
who you might know, has been, did the music for this movie, and we'll get into that. But I heard Toto did it, and I was like, oh well, shit, that should be awesome.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Paul, how about you? Had you seen this previously, and give me what your previous experience with Dune was?
Yeah, so I was going to bring this up. I think this is perhaps the worst introduction to Dune that I could have possibly had, because I have no experience. I've not seen the new Dune movies. I've not read the book. No experience with this movie. And it's a David Lynch movie. So perhaps it's not the worst I could have had, because I think there were pretty interesting things about what we saw, but it was just it really took me for a ride. And I feel like my understanding of the narrative direction of Dune is probably about where it was before I knew anything about Dune. I don't think that's changed. But we can get more into that later.
Okay. And last but not least, Alex Princeton, give me your kind of what your experience was before. And this is your first time seeing the 80s movie, obviously.
Yeah, had never seen the 80s movie. I've recently seen Dune 2021. Before that, I'd watched lots of clips. And then I think like Dune is something that if you are a certain kind of nerd is like floating around the culture, and it's hard to like be online or just be a nerd in existence without like having come across a bit of like Dune lore here and there.
Yeah,
some familiarity with the universe.
Yeah. So my own personal background with this is that this was actually my first exposure to Dune, period. I had kind of colloquially heard terms like Arrakis, and I knew that like they were all after the spice, and I knew that there was this like psychic scream kind of deal. I knew Sting was in the movie. I knew there were worms. I knew there was a lot of sand. So I knew like a lot of the paraphernalia, but I didn't really know anything about Dune. And boy, howdy, was this an introduction of a movie. Paul, I think you and I are in the same camp of like, there could not be a worse way to get like introduced to this universe. And I don't hate this movie. I'm coming down at like a very specific middling review. I think, you know, Jesse, you probably You may or may not know this, depending on how much of the podcast you listen to, but I'm always complaining about movies being too long. I actually think this movie is not long enough, and that is the primary problem with it. There's not enough time, especially as a newcomer to this universe, to get used to all this crazy vocabulary, to understand kind of like the politics of what's going on. There's just not enough time. And so the first half of the movie is like horribly slow and people talking to each other in these very like almost Shakespearean, just flat dialogue scenes. And then the second half of the movie is totally bonkers and really awesome.
It really is a tale of two halves, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The first half maybe is passable. I got through the first half thinking like, okay, it's like kind of cheesy, but most 80s sci-fi is. And it's obviously like a tough source material because it's so dense. And then that second half is just off the rails.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jesse.
I got to like the... So due to time constraints, I was like, you know, I was very aware of how long this movie was. And when we got to like the... What was the runtime? It was like 2 hours and 16 minutes or something.
Yep, yep.
I was at like the 1 hour and 20 minute mark, and I was like, "Ooh, how are they gonna do this?" Oh, they got a lot to go to the end. But they squeezed it in there.
So there's a question: like, is the longest cut of this movie out there 3 hours or something? Is there? Did he actually try to tell the whole story and it just didn't make it?
You guys keep talking. I'll look it up.
Yeah. And Jesse, you've seen both of the new movies, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think obviously a prudent choice by that team to split the book in two parts.
Yep.
Yeah.
For sure. And I think they did it. I think they did it at the right point. Like, when the plot kind of turns on its heel, so they like, you know, cut the movie in half right there. So
for those who haven't seen it, like Dune 2021 ends basically immediately following the siege of Arrakeen.
So right? According
not that
to
much later.
According to IMDb, Lynch shot 6 hours of film. I wanted it to be 3+ hours. The studio got him down to 217. He famously did not have final cut on this movie.
Yeah. So like
what happens to all that footage?
Yeah.
Just
never got,
yeah, it's in a vault. It,
waiting for Sam
know.
To liberate it and release the Stray Jack cut.
The Stray, dude. I know David Lynch is never going to go back to this movie because he famously hates it so much, but I would be really curious. I would totally watch like a super long David Lynch cut of this movie. Anyway, keep
going. So Dune 2021 ends. It takes like a little over two hours to tell the story up to where Jesus Christ, I'm forgetting his name, Timothy Chalamet meets the Fremen in the desert.
Okay.
And that's like that's 2.5 or a little over 2 hours in the new version. And then
and that's
another...
even with not telling all the details too. Like I think there's still a lot of spooky, oh, what does that mean? What is this thing that they don't tell you about in the first movie? Which I think is okay. To some extent, it was interesting. Like you had mentioned, there was like just a slew of proper nouns, and yep. I get what you're saying. I think the first Dune movie doesn't Dune 1 doesn't do quite as bad a job at that.
Yeah, I just was trying to give a sense of like the scale, you know, but yeah, they're condensing a lot, suffice to say.
You know, and I think a lot of the problem stems from the pronunciations of these words and terms are very obscure, but the concepts are not obscure. You know, it's like warring planets and factions and shit we see in sci-fi and fantasy movies all the time. And this person is the chosen one, but they're called the... yeah, okay. Gesundheit. Anyway. Fun little side note here. Did you guys know that David Lynch was being scouted to direct Return of the Jedi?
Yeah,
that would have been totally bonkers. Anyway, I think a lot of the problem comes from the terms just being like really crazy sounding and not easily pronounceable or like rememberable. And another thing that I think is very strange about this movie that I wish they would knock it the hell off is the internal monologue.
Oof. Yeah.
That shit does not work for me. And like clearly they added it in post because people didn't understand. I think what probably happened is they showed it to test audiences and test audiences came out. They're like, I have no idea what I just watched. So they added in the inner monologue stuff to clear things up.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So the book, the book actually lines up as far as like the inner monologue stuff goes, like the stuff that they say and the things that they repeat to themselves. It's kind of like Herbert's style, like to have these little phrases that they say to themselves, like a trap within a trap within a trap, blue within blue within blue, like these little stylistic things. And I'm not sure whether they were like, oh man, we're not telling the story, stick it in there, or they were just trying to like jam like Herbert's, like if they were trying to like stick that in somehow. But either way, yeah, I don't think it's done very well. It certainly doesn't need to be there, I think. But yeah.
Yeah, I could see that. When did everybody, while you're watching this movie, when was the point where you were like, uh-oh? Paul, how about you? Because you're in the same boat as me, right? Where we didn't have any context going into this.
Yeah. I would say the scene where you first meet Baron Harkonnen, that might have been my oh no moment.
Okay. Why do you think that, Paul?
Just seeing like how cartoonishly grotesque he is as a character, and I don't know the name of the actor that played him, but just the delivery of his just like ontologically evil character is so, I can't think of a word other than cartoonish. But I think that it was an early scene in the movie that I feel set the pace for me as a complete newbie to the Dune universe as to like what we were in for moving forward.
Okay. Anil, you were going to say something.
I was going to say, I think the movie gets off to a bad start in like, so A, you get the giant floating space face of Virginia Madsen, just expositional dialogue right off the bat. But then you meet the Emperor, and they immediately throw a guild navigator in your face. And I think
the guild navigator.
The guild navigator, like it's a great effect.
Best part of this film.
But like again, just like to a general audience, like you're just immediately throwing like one of the weirdest things in the movie, like first 5 minutes, just like right in your face, like oh god.
These things aren't even in the first book. This. He was just like excited to get one of these on screen.
Yes.
Yeah. I was gonna say, like, even if Paul doesn't like the Harkonnen scenes, I think I would put like $50 that the Harkonnen scenes were Lynch's favorite things to shoot.
Oh, I wasn't saying I didn't like them. I just think that they were very pivotal in setting the pace for like how David Lynch was gonna do this movie.
Gotcha.
But you can finish your point, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I just think that those were his favorite bits because like he stuck Jack Nance in, and he just gets to be as weird as he wants to be because it's just like so bizarre.
Neil, can I tell you I'm jumping ahead a little bit to where we talk about our favorite shit, but every time the Harkonnens were on screen, I was having the time of my life with this movie. I fucking love the Harkonnens in this movie. Every time he's in that fat suit and he's like spinning around in it. I was sitting there like laughing my ass off and just having a great time, but he's like milking the cat and he's like just doing all this maniacally evil shit.
That's the part that I woke up to in my my COVID haze. I was like pretty out of it, and I just like woke up, and he's just like, "How about some spittle on your face?" It's like, whoa, what is this movie? Okay. I don't remember that in the book. It wasn't in the book.
Okay, so two points. Francesca Annese, who plays Lady Jessica, I just want to be the first person to go on record. No. Total smoke show. Like, oh.
We need to get a button that plays like an audio clip of all of us like screaming MILF alert for these moments on the podcast. I'm gonna make a note about that.
Oh, add it to the Discord soundboard.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Alex Princeton, give me your first the first moment of this movie you knew you were in danger.
Yeah, so again, I give this a lot of liberty for being a 1980s sci-fi film. Like, outside of Star Wars, almost every like sci-fi film between 70 and 80 is total trash. And this, for me, rises above total trash. I like The Navigator a lot, actually. I think it's like both Lynchian and very weird, as the Dune universe is intended to be, at least in my view. I don't think this really goes off the rails for me until we're with Paul in the desert and he meets the Fremen and like they accelerate the timeline. They start playing the movie on like 2 or 3x speed, you know, like we are introduced to Chani and about like 5 minutes later, she says, "I'll love you forever, Paul Atreides," or something. And I'm just like, all right, like, we're not even trying anymore. And I think you've got about 50% pretty good movie. Oh, we were watching, Neil and I were watching with Paul, and there's a line where Chani says something like, "Paul, I'll love you and support you forever." And then Paul stopped the movie and said, like, "Can we just play that again?"
So you're contending that the good half of this movie is the first half of this movie.
I think so. And then it kind of goes off the rails. I like the closing scene, the fight scene. It's over the top, but it's pretty fun. I think there's like 40 minutes of garbage in there where they try to speed through the plot. That's my view.
See, almost all my favorite scenes were from the last half of the movie, and it was mostly Paul surfing on the worms while that sick guitar
riff
played in the background.
They were just like
Holy
really
shit.
Funny and over the top.
Yeah. It was because I was like finally enjoying myself, and it was like, okay, it's not just like people talking to each other anymore. I will say an earlier scene than that I really loved was Picard charging into battle with a
pug. My god. Dude, Patrick Stewart's fucking hair in this is maybe like the first moment where it really went off the rails for me.
And another really early scene was the first scene where they had the personal shields.
Yes.
And then like the square, like those.
That was the 80s though.
Yeah, I'm not making fun of the special effect. I'm just saying that it is one of those really old school, cool, non-CGI special effects that I love from sci-fi movies of this era. I thought those looked so cool, even though they were, you know, like old school tech or whatever. I thought those were awesome.
It's funny you'd bring that up, because when I saw that scene, the only thing that was going through my head was I wonder what I would think of this if I was watching this when I was like 10 years old. Would I think this is like badass, or would it not, you know, because I was 10 years old in 2005. So it's like, would that not do it for me in my 2005 10 year old brain, or would that be enough for me to be like, this is awesome?
I thought like General Grievous was badass when I was in 2005 and I was
okay. But compare that body shield from the 1984 non-CGI graphics to General Grievous, and you know what I mean.
Yeah. Oh no, I'm saying that in retrospect, I think Grievous kind of is like so 2005 edgelord. But anyway, you know, that was aside the point. We'll have a Star Wars podcast some other time.
There's an interesting deviation from the book a little bit. So I was the Dune, at least the first, the Dune book has this hand-to-hand combat. Not hand-to-hand, but like melee combat for like most person-to-person interactions. It's not just like guns everywhere in the book anyway. And the shields are like the way that they can like make that a little bit more interesting in the book, I think. And so what was funny is in this movie, they only pull it out once in the opening scene when he's like training with his master, which is in the book. They like have this little, they have that exact interaction in the book, but the like the shields come up like a lot, and they, I guess they use the shields on the city, but like they didn't use it. They didn't have them on each other, in any of the combat. And actually, in the second half of the movie, when it starts to accelerate, the whole business with the Weirding Way, and they're using these guns to like, that's totally made up. That did not come from the books, at least not in that. There was some Weirding Way stuff in the book, but it wasn't about guns or the special technology to like make a bazooka out of your voice. It was like a fighting style. It was more like jujitsu or something.
Right.
But the part where he's like, here are the plans for the Weirding Way, and he gives them to Paul, and then Paul trains the Fremen and how to use these bazooka voice gun things. That's like a what's it called? A deus ex machina, is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Just something to like, okay, let's get it all done. Let's kill all the bad guys. Let's get it
right.
All done.
Yeah. Let's blow up some. There's a lot of awesome scenes at the end of this movie where people are just, there's limbs flying off of Harkonnens everywhere. And it was just glorious. Like the last 10 minutes of this movie were like Saving Private Ryan. It was totally awesome.
Yeah. Go ahead, Sam.
No, I was just stalling for time. Yeah.
No. So like, I know Alex has said that he thinks that the first half is the stronger half and you think the second half is stronger. And I get both points because I think the first half is structured in a more traditional movie style. Like we're trying to lay the groundwork. And I get that. Yeah. You don't like the talking, but you know, it's important for understanding what comes next. And then, yeah, the second part is like a bunch of like really cool set pieces. But because of the pacing, it doesn't make sense anymore. Like, you're just jumping. It's like you edited the movie, you, Sam Strajak. Like, you cut out all the talking, right. all the things that, like, make it make sense, and you're just like, here's the action scenes. It's like a best of montage on YouTube.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I totally agree with what you're saying. I think that, actually, a lot of the, when you go back and you read a lot of the reviews from the 80s about this movie, it's like, yeah, the beginning is confusing and it's slow or whatever, but it really goes off the rails at about the halfway point once they meet the Fremen. Am I saying that correct? And then everything, like you guys said, he meets Sean Young, and then two scenes later, him and Sean Young are getting married or whatever. So I acknowledge that, you know, it's both, in my opinion, both parts of the movie are like, quote unquote, like, objectively bad. I just subjectively like the second part more because I have dumb brain, and I like when the Toto guitar riff plays and he's like surfing on the sandworm. I was like, you know, hell yeah, brother.
I will say I liked I think that the new Dune movies suffer from like not leaning into the weirdness of the spice hard enough. In the book, even though there is all of this long-seated sort of superstition and like blind faith or whatever, and all these people are kind of like subjects before their subjugator has even come, there's the fact is that the spice is like this powerful, crazy, world twisting substance, and the new movies don't quite acknowledge that, but I think David Lynch did a good job of like just like reaffirming that. And like Paul's, when he like takes the juice and he like has his vision, I was very relieved to see that they like brought it to full fruition with all of the like the Bene Gesserit were like bleeding, and the guild guy was like, no. It was like awesome. This is what should happen. So,
you know, I think there's a lot of consternation on the internet that, like, oh, David Lynch was not the right person to direct this. But I'm not really quite sure I agree with that. I think that this movie is very strong from a visual perspective. And to your point, I think the story of Dune lends itself to, like, interesting dream sequences. And we get that one of those, like, late in the movie where there's just, like, it's like a montage of just still image, like a montage of paintings that kind of, like, sets this mood and this tone. And I think David Lynch is really, really good at that. I mean, what is the what do you call the thing, the alien that
the navigator, traveler,
navigators, is? I mean, that thing is like a more high tech version of the Eraserhead baby.
They don't even touch the navigators in the new films, right? I don't think they show one on camera, at least not.
They just hint that the guild is out there. Yeah.
Before I get the navigators out of my head, I really like the touch of the guys with the vacuums cleaning up after the navigators. I think there's something very funny and mundane about that. But I love the visual effects in this movie. Like, I think the worms look totally awesome, and there's a lot of shots that establish a really grand sense of scale. Like the first time they fly over the spice mining operation, and that the worm comes out of the sand and just envelops the entire thing. That scene was awesome.
I think the effects in this movie are actually generally pretty good, and I think I agree that David Lynch is probably a good person to have on those. I think one of the weakest things, though, is some of the composite shots. And while I was watching, it's not an original thought, but my way of expressing it, I thought was kind of good, is that composite shots are like the CIA. When somebody's doing their job really well, you don't know that it's happening. But when it's not done well, you know somebody's just fucked up on a massive scale.
Yeah,
that's a good analogy.
Yeah, there's some early. Well, I don't want to say early 80s, because Blade Runner is also early 80s and looks a million times better than this movie does. But yeah, there's a little bit of jank in some of the effects in this movie.
Can you give an example of a scene, Neil, where you see real problems there?
Maybe like, I think actually, as much as Sam might like them, a lot of like the worm riding scenes.
Yeah.
Where it's like Kyle MacLachlan's face and he's just... Yeah. And like, and all of his friends and buddies are just like in the background going pew pew, and it's just.
Well, it's like one of those like old timey driving scenes where they're like running some kind of like background reel on a rig. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of like that.
Or like the scene where when he like had the hook in the worm and it was like pulling him up. It looked silly. I think they did the worm right when it was just the worm. Which I guess is what Neil's point is.
Totally.
I think Kyle MacLachlan is actually pretty good in this movie. And I think Kyle MacLachlan is pretty good in everything I've seen him in. I really like him as an actor. The person that this movie really soured me on is Sean Young, who I don't think is good in the original Blade Runner, and she's not good here.
Okay, so...
Was that
Sean Young? Yeah,
Sean. Okay, so... Before we give our opinion on Kyle MacLachlan's performance here, a few other people who were considered for the role: Tom Cruise, Kevin Costner, Kenneth Branagh, and Val Kilmer, who was actually the choice before MacLachlan auditioned.
That's very interesting. I could really see any of them doing that. I know we like want to look back and say like, oh, you know, Tom Cruise, Scientology, or Val Kilmer got fat and played Batman or whatever. But you know, Patrick Swayze was in a movie called, or Kevin Costner was in a movie called Waterworld. But I could see any of those guys doing it. But I thought that, like, generally speaking, like the cast and the performances were like serviceable in this movie. Although there are, and it's funny, like looking back at it, there's five or six different actors from this that end up being in Twin Peaks.
People have already thrown their flowers at the Harkonnens, but I want to do mine. So the Harkonnens are like, you know, they're like distinctly evil, and the book had a take on it, and the new movies have their take on it, but David Lynch had his own take on it too. Like the cats thing was pretty weird. He made that up, you know, that's his own like his own brainchild. And the heart plugs, Neil, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think the heart plugs was in the book.
No, that's totally a Lynch insertion.
That freaked me out. I'm not kidding. Like the first, when he reads, he's like, I was like, oh
yeah.
No. I almost went pale. I was like, oh my gosh. That was uniquely...
There's a lot of gruesome shit in this movie.
Speaking of
like the cow's tongue, like this that's all his own brain. Like
the hand melting inside the pain box was very gruesome.
Just speaking of the navigator itself. Can anyone tell me, are there pugs in Dune, or is that all Lynch?
I think that's also just like they don't focus on the dogs nearly as much in the book.
But they're also like the least majestic dogs imaginable.
But they're a rich person dog.
Is that true about pugs?
Yeah, they're, or maybe I'm thinking more like French bulldogs. But pugs are the same thing, basically. Like,
yeah, I bet.
It's a lap dog for rich ladies to keep their hands warm.
I just like there's never a scene in Star Wars where like Luke Skywalker pets his dog. You know,
really, that's what Chewbacca's for.
Stood out to me. Yeah.
What's everybody's favorite scene in this movie?
I had two more quick notes on performances.
Yeah.
One was just a fun note. It says here that Dune 1984 was Kyle MacLachlan's debut.
That sounds about right.
What a weird place to start your film career.
Yeah.
If you don't know Jesse, he follows David Lynch like through many, many films. His favorite star.
Yeah. He ended up being in Blue Velvet, and then of course he's the star of Twin Peaks.
Yeah. And then my other one, I was just curious, Jesse, if you know, like, the new movies make a big deal out of the character Duncan Idaho. Jason Momoa it plays him, and then in like this film, I don't even know why they like just didn't cut him.
He's a little bit. I think substantially his story arc isn't that much longer in the book. But they didn't have. They just did. They were just running this movie so fast that I think if you played it at that scale, yeah, that's about how like fast he comes and goes. In the book, there's a little more camaraderie and there's like a friendship there and.
He's a more so significant character in the sequels.
Got it. Okay, those are my two notes. We can do favorite scenes.
Which character in the 84 Dune was Duncan Idaho?
So he is like the trusted soldier or associate of the father who goes ahead to Dune to like scout.
Oh yeah, okay. I know who you're talking about. Yeah, he was barely in it at all. Okay, I know who you're talking about. Yeah, favorite scenes. What do we got, guys?
I'll be the first to say it. I mean, like you've been saying, Sam, the visuals in this movie, I think for me are my favorite part, and maybe that's like kind of a midwit thing to say. But so for me, I'll just say when Paul ingests the spice and the visuals and then sequencing that you see throughout that whole.
Okay, how about you, Princeton?
I like when Kyle MacLachlan fights Sting to the death.
Yeah, I also enjoyed watching Sting get a knife to the face. That was pretty awesome.
I think it's the highlight of the second half of the film. It's probably the best end scene there, in my view.
Okay, how about you, Neil?
You know, I think I got to pick the Harkonnen scene where Raban comes in, he like rips a cow tongue out and starts eating it, and the Baron's like spinning around a steam vent maniacally. and then the most erotic moment of the movie when Sting comes out wearing a Harkonnen crest and does
like a metal hawk speedo.
Yeah.
How about you, Jesse?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with Paul. Like the scene where he trips out on the
on the worm intestine juice is pretty cool. And I think if I had to pick a second, for some reason I really like the way that they did the like guild ships. Besides the I don't know what this falls under. Like, this is my gamer brain. But like concept art, I guess. The concept art, they were thinking like really big when they did like the creative design of this movie, when they wanted to like bring Dune to life. And when they're like flying into the like when the Atreides ship is like flying into the guild ship, it's like this huge golden arch thing, and it's doing this like 80s thing, like in the Blade Runner when he's like flying between the cities. It's like that scale and that style when he's like flying into the guild ship. I was like, oh, this is so awesome. Yeah, so that's probably my runner up.
Well, for me, for once, I think Neil and I are going to agree that our favorite scene is exactly the same. I love when they were in that big steamy room and Baron Harkonnen was just spinning and laughing maniacally around that thing and eating cow tongues and doing all sorts of crazy shit. And I'll give a special shout out to all the wide shots of the Harkonnen ships. They were very like black and white, or it was like all black, and then off in the corner it would just be the ship lit a little bit in like very dark shadows, and it almost looked like a mouth. You know what I'm talking about? That I thought that was a really striking, like all the visual stuff regarding the Harkonnens was just so like industrialism and just kind of gritty. I love that shit. We're everybody's least favorite scene, least favorite part in this movie.
I'll go. I think like the when they're riding the sandworm back to Arakeen, which is the capital, and they're like taking it back, I just think it's not done very well.
I would
Yeah.
say, Neil, go ahead.
I think I'm going to agree with Alex, just that like yeah, like the final battle before the knife fight. Yeah, it's just like the music rips. Toto did a fantastic job.
Yes, it does.
But it's
But
kind of
yeah,
like cut to explosion, cut back to worm, cut to other explosion, cut back to worm. I don't know.
and there really isn't like a sense of like stakes. Like I think it's supposed to be like yeah, glorious triumphant return and all that. But again, it's just Kyle MacLachlan leaning back as he controls the worm, while all of his friends go pew pew off the side.
How about you, Paul?
I'm thinking really hard, and it's hard to pinpoint one scene that I think stands out as particularly bad. Like there were a lot that were very visceral, but I think that I don't think that makes them bad. It makes them better. But I think there were large segments of the movie where the pacing was a bit off, and that made it. It definitely didn't help with the complexity of the plot, that the pacing of the movie was off at very specific times. But it's hard for me to pinpoint one scene where I think this is done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of agree with you, Paul. Like, I don't really have a particularly like bad scene that sticks out in my mind. I just think that like there's a lot of it that I don't remember, especially in the first half where I was just like my eyes were glazed over and they were just tossing new words at me that I didn't really understand. So, it's kind of hard to latch on. Jesse, how about you? Is there anything, any particularly bad shit that stands out?
Yes, actually. So one thing we haven't talked about yet is the Paul's little sister at the end of the movie. So that is from the book, and I was thinking when I was watching this, I'm like, could they have done this any better? I don't know. I don't know. Like having like this little child has the intelligence of a human. And they're also like psychic, and they're using the voice. So all these things were present in how it was playing out, and it just didn't come out right. It was spooky. It was weird to watch.
You're talking about the little girl who talks like Satan, right?
I think part of it is that voiceover. Like, they clearly dub over her, and it just doesn't work.
That was a striking visual. I'll give that to you.
The other element is, like, they introduced that character, I think, with like 30 minutes left to go in the movie, and then she takes this big role in the last scene.
I totally understand where you're coming from on that one. Okay, we're about at the 50 minute mark, so where do we want to come down in terms of stars here, gentlemen? Jesse, we work on a 5-star system with no half stars.
Oh, 5-star system, no half stars?
Yeah. So I think it forces you to make interesting choices and not have, like, complete, like, you can't do a 2-5 and effectively give it a middle of the road.
I'm not a movie guy. I don't have a good star principle.
Do anyone want us to come back to you after we go around? No, let's go around.
No. Okay. I'm gonna give it 2 stars. I wanted it to be good. I'm a Dune enjoyer so far. This is what I wanted it to be. I wanted it to spank Dylan Uribe for me. You know, I know that it's not gonna win. Like, right. Dylan Uribe has, like, all this money. But he has all this money. He did it in 2 movies. I've seen them. They look really good. It's newer. The effects are better. Fine. Whatever. But maybe Lynch got it right in spirit. And he like, held the torch. And I think that I wanted him to do that. But his movie wasn't long enough. And... yeah, the rushed ending and like the little details to like speed up the plot, the little deaths that he had to make, or sacrifices rather. I think that they just kind of killed it for me. So yeah, I'm gonna say 2.
So you wanted to like it more than you ended up liking it.
Yeah,
that is a very disappointing. And I know what you mean. Like, there's this new polished, brilliant version of Dune, and you kind of want the old one to have, you feel like it's going to have a little heart, and it's going to have the hand of its creator, and I would certainly say this does have the hand of its creator, but almost in a detrimental sort of way. How about you, Paul?
I was going to give it a 2 as well. It's not a bad movie. It is very redeemable. I think there's a lot to like about it. Like I said, visuals are very clean. Even if you struggle with the plot, even if you struggle with the pacing, like I did, I had a lot of fun watching it. But with that, let's be real. I'm never going to watch this movie again. I'm not going to sit down and be like, okay, I'm in the frame of mind now where I want to watch Dune fully invested. I want to watch David Lynch's 1984. That's not going to happen. But it was good. I'm glad I watched it once. And that's maybe all I can say about it.
Okay. How about you, Princeton?
You know, I think I'm going to join the crew here. I'll give it a strong 2. You know, maybe the deleted scenes or all that extra footage, if they're cut together and we fleshed out the second half of the film a little more, there's like a strong 3 in there. But it's not unfaithful to the source material. You know, I guess, like, it seems like there's a lot of the original in there. There's a little extra from Lynch. I think it's got a striking visual style, as others have mentioned. I think there are some good performances, but just the execution, the storytelling pacing makes it almost unwatchable.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. Neil, how about you?
Yeah, I think I'm going to be green. I think it's a strong 2. I think it's totally worth watching at least once. I'll keep bringing up, I think the Toto soundtrack totally rips. I think there's a lot of like really good scenes in there. And just, I think it just suffers from the way it was edited, like which scenes were chosen, and it's just very rushed. Two hours is not enough time to tell this story.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. You know, as much as I want to have I think what would have been our first ever episode where we all give the same number of stars to a movie, I'm going to deviate and I'm going to give it the lowest possible 3. If that makes sense. So, you know, high 2, low 3, but I think I'm going to give it the lowest possible 3. I enjoyed this movie more than the last couple movies we watched, which I think I gave 2s to. Even though I can objectively admit that they were better, more solidly made, more perfect movies, I certainly found myself enjoying this one quite a bit. Jesse, what's up? You're muted.
Sorry, yeah. I just posted this screenshot of this Harkonnen henchman sucking on this thing. it's here. I was trying to figure out how to get a screenshot of it, and I couldn't.
I'll make that the episode art for the podcast. How about that?
Cool.
Okay. Yeah. So thanks everybody for joining us. So I think we're basically 2s and 3s all around on Dune. Whose turn was it to pick next week? Okay, Alex Princeton. What do you think we're gonna do for next week?
Well, it keep came in mind to light that
Gideon will be out next week as well.
Yeah, it came to light that many of you have not seen Tommy Boy. In fact, I think Gideon was the only one who had seen it. Is that right?
Neil? I have seen Tommy Boy.
Oh. Oh, okay. I thought we said you hadn't. Have you seen it in a
Gideon
long time?
Had not. I've seen like bits and pieces on cable, like at my parents' house.
What about let me just say one more in the same vein. Have you seen Beverly Hills Ninja?
Oh my god, dude.
I want to watch
How many 2-star movies are we gonna do in a row? You guys have been fucking torturing me.
I can take it back to the drawing board. I mean, I think
No. I'm more than happy to do whatever you want to do.
I think Tommy Boy's a great film.
You gotta watch Videodrome and get back to us, because I liked you. Like, I think Paul would like Videodrome.
Okay, well, let me just say I had initially been thinking something like kind of heady. And then I was like, no, maybe we need to watch like a dumb comedy, especially if these guys haven't seen it. But I'll chew on it and get back to you.
Okay. Yeah, sounds good. Well, if that's it, thanks, Jesse, for making time and coming on the podcast. I know you've got a very busy schedule.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Jesse. I'll say, despite the 2-star rating, had a blast watching this with Paul and Neil. We did a little bit of Riff Tracks action, I guess.
For sure.
This is like a good Riff Tracks hang out with the boys, drink a couple 40s, have a pizza kind of movie. I would, Paul, despite what you said earlier, I would totally rewatch this movie under those circumstances. That sounds totally awesome.
Well, I already did that the first time, so I guess that's why I said I wouldn't rewatch it.
You know, I watched it with Grace, and we've been trying to eat healthy dinners, so we had like a Caesar salad and watched Dune.
You watched the Harkonnens.
And I watched the Harkonnens
while eating your salad.
And I drank a Dr. Pepper Zero.
Like a huge L, dude.
No. So another huge L in my life I'll mention before we log off. Right before we got on, I'm on the final boss fight of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and I have died to Sephiroth like 5 times. And I'm going to try to do it before I go to bed. So,
All right.
We'll see how things go. What are we doing Advent Children for the podcast, guys?
Oh, God.
I'll show up for that episode.
Paul, that's a movie I would legit give a 1 to. That movie sucks.
There was a guy in my geometry class who memorized the prayer to the mother from
Advent
Children. And he wanted to recite it to me in geometry. We were friends. I was friends with him, but he decided to do that to me in geometry.
My follow-up question, Jesse, was Stacy around during this?
She was.
Oh.
Yep.
You were implicated in the prayer. Damn.
The okay. First time I ever Netflix and chilled with a girl, it was Advent Children. I was in high school. Nice. I had my high school girlfriend come over and we watched Advent Children in the basement freshman year.
I've got a good Netflix and still and chill story surrounding The Emperor's New Groove, but we'll save that for another time.
Oh, man.
Oh, cool. Thanks, guys. Oh, man. All right. See you guys.
Later, guys.
Bye, everyone.